So, and that's when I said, everybody loves Arby's. It doesn't matter if it looks like somebody put a firecracker in the sandwich or not. Arby's has the meats.
Doesn't matter if it looks exploded. What matters is the taste. How does it taste?
Look, and even when if the
taint is warm and gooey and dribbling from the source, nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Even if it looks like somebody put last year's M80 in the roast beef flavored Hot Pocket, it's still going to be delicious. And it's still hot to me, no matter how long you take it out of the oven or the microwave and let it cool. Those things are still lava, except for the center, which is somehow still absolutely frozen.
How?
It's like if you took the world's oceans, like just around the North Pole, and made them lava, that's a hot.
I am convinced that Robert Jordan ate a Hot Pocket one day and was like, this is some bullshit. You know what? Men who can channel, this is the agony that they're going to go through every fucking time.
This is what Sidine feels like, a Hot Pocket out of the microwave.
We've had it wrong this whole time. It's never been whiskey. It's never been a hangover.
Yeah, it's never even been an oil slick over water. It's been a fucking microwaved Hot Pocket.
Hey, everybody, welcome out
to the
Black Tower. What?
Last time I said something about that, I had somebody who's like, well, you know you're supposed to, like, change the power settings on the microwave so that it heats more evenly. And I'm like, I'm hungry. I'm not doing math. Piss off. Anyway, you were saying...
Why do people wish to, you know... Don't fix it, okay? Don't try and fix it. You can't fix it. I just need to complain about it. Welcome to the Black Tower. My name is Josh. I am the illustrious Mihail of the Sorovan variety.
And I am Andrew, the once illustrated Bijan Mihail. Back there in the dark where you can't see.
I love it. That's perfect. Once illustrated. Yep. I like that.
Once illustrated. It only happened one time, but it has been an honor ever since. Every time I walk through
that office, that was a good day. That was a good day.
Every time I walk over here into the office and I go to turn on those lights by the dragon banner, and I look and I see that sprawling hunk of man on that canvas.
Why doesn't he have that in his merch store? He should. Yeah. I'll bet everybody would buy it. I'd buy one. Shit.
I'd hang it on my bed. That's about the closest I've ever come to OnlyFans.
So you could be there with me.
Hey, man. Get it done as a sticker and you can slap it on the bike.
There you go. So I can have you with me all the time.
Yeah, man.
Oh, I love it. What are we doing tonight? Yeah, what are we doing tonight?
That's what I ask myself every day. Like, I have a plan. I know what's going on. What am I doing? Well, one thing I know that you can do is when you find yourself sluggish and tired and the brain's not working at full capacity, go on over to w.gg and use code BTP to get 10% off your orders of nice, delicious, jitterless energy that will definitely help you out. If you've ever seen me, if you watch the podcast and you see me with the blue or red shaker with the anime waifu on it, because I'm drinking my W. These are my W cups. For W only. And it's delicious. This one is the orange creamsicle, which I fucking love. This is absolutely delicious.
And if you use code BTP at the checkout, you get 10% off.
Yep. They got a ton of flavors. They got shakers. I know they were adding some more anime shakers. All that kind of stuff. They're fantastic. They're delicious. They're even mentally nutritious. I don't know about physically because I don't have the ingredients right in front of me. We like it. I feel safe drinking.
Not FDA approved, though.
Yeah. Like most supplements. So.
Um,
you know, If you live your life only consuming what the FDA has approved, then it might be too much energy for you anyway. Life's too short to eat only FDA approved products.
I think they did that. Maybe that's Demolition Man.
Hmm.
I said they did that in Demolition Man, where they went down to the sewer and dude's eating a hamburger, and they're all like, "Do you see any cows around here?" He's like, "What do you make the burger out of?" And the lady was like, "Rat meat." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "It's the best burger I had in 50 years.
Damn. You never know, man. Stuff could be good. I think the worst I saw was like, have you seen the movie Snowpiercer with Chris Evans?
Yeah.
When they go and they're like, "Oh, look, it's nutrient blocks. Oh, look, they're still warm." And they start chowing down on them. And then he's like, Chris Evans' character's like, "How are they made?" And it's just like a big mixer of bugs.
Yeah.
So, which might be fine for some folks, not fine for me. I don't like to eat bugs.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I don't like it. I just will never find out.
The idea of eating bugs is a repellent idea. Yes.
It makes my throat itch. Like I need to like cough. Yeah. Like if you've ever had like a gnat or something fly down your throat and then like for the next like 10 years you feel like it's still there.
Yeah.
Just wiggling around on your little dingle dangle up there.
On your little dingle dangle. That's it. That's the one. That's exactly it.
That gnat touched
Jordan Con.
Back of my throat.
We're literally just a few days away from Jordan Con. Yeah. It's Con Crunch. It's time. If you got a cosplay for Jordan Con, now's the time to finish it up.
I should probably take
my messing around
bags
with that shit. What?
I should probably take mine out of the bags and make sure like it all fits and everything. I haven't done that yet.
I've got 3 pieces of leather armor to make still. Mm. But they're simple. Like one is a belt and one is a, you know, bracer. So it should be pretty easy. Like, I should be able to get that done pretty good.
Oh, look at this guy. Oh, yeah. I got 3 pieces of leather to make. Oh, you know, it's simple. Simple stuff.
Super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to go to a thrift store so I can get a muumuu for the dance.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting about that, too.
So Jordan Con's coming up. That's going to be exciting. We've got the dual Toastmasters for the first time in Jordan Con history. That's exciting.
Yeah.
It's
just going to be a really fun time. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's the highlight of the year, really. One of them. There's a couple of bright points in the year, and this is definitely one of them. And there's going to be a lot of really cool people there. My brother's coming. I've got some other dear friends coming. London River is going to be there. Bunch of friends of the show. You know what I'm saying? They're all going to be there. It's going to be exciting.
Bunch of friends of the dark.
Friends of the dark.
But if you're there and you're listening to this live, or if you've already listened to this and you know you're coming or whatever, and you see us around, please do say hi. Feel free to. I should actually be downstairs some this year, unlike last year.
Oh yeah.
So
that would be great.
Yeah. I'm waiting on one thing to still come in the mail, but I don't know if it's going to be here because the delivery window is between April 8th and 23rd. So, but if I don't have it for JordanCon, I'll have it for WattCon.
All right. Well, anyway, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. That'll be great.
Oh, yeah. Please do. Cross them fingers. Oh, yeah. Nice and tight. Like. Anyway.
All crossed.
Before we get into tonight's episode and topic, let's go ahead and protect everybody from the spoilers. Here we go. Here's your spoiler warning. Take it away, Norm.
Hello. I'm Tamsir Al Norm. You may remember me from the Dusty Wheel or the Black Tower podcast. I'm here to give you a public service announcement about spoilers, as this episode may contain some. As if you didn't already know that, like watching the film Titanic and being surprised that the boat sinks at the end of the movie. Hello, moron. The movie is called Titanic. Of course the boat fracking sinks. This show is called the Black Tower Podcast, as in from the Wheel of Time. And these three guys are Ashaman. Well, at least two of them. I don't know about that Josh guy. Anyway, you have been warned.
Awkward.
I think he's an Ashaman. I don't know. He just showed up and he never went away.
I mean, that's kind of all it takes sometimes. Make it till you make it, you know?
You're not wrong.
But, so, what slash who are we talking about today, Josh?
Well, here's the thing.
Regale us with the tale.
We're going to regale you with a tale, you. And we're going to go turn the Wayback Machine to Takaran Riyadh, right?
Yep.
And we were on the Takaran Riyadh show, and it was a lot of fun. And we had a whole conversation about Padan Fane and his role in the show, how it differs from the books. It was a really great episode. As a matter of fact, we should get the link to that episode in the description below if we don't have it already. But one of the things we talked about is Fane's interaction with people and corrupting other people. And at one point in time, Andrew, you came across a passage. Is that what you're looking up right now?
Yep, I'm getting it ready so that I have it.
We came across a passage that kind of changed our understanding of,
there it is,
Elida, like wholly and entirely. Like,
but I think before we get into what changed, I think we should just kind of go and do our kind of background breakdown, brief overview of Elida and okay. Like the events from the books and everything like that, and then bring this in, because I don't know how many people remember it. I'm sure like people that have been talking about the books for decades are like, oh yeah, of course. This just never clicked or stuck in my head or whatever. And yeah, I think it's definitely cool.
Well, we've got,
does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
When talk we about Elida to Avrini Aruyan.
Yeah. And when we first meet her,
Elida do be Avrini.
In Camelin, right? Do be Avrini.
Yeah. That's her Rastafarian persona. Elida Doobie Avrini.
I like it.
I'm jealous of that persona. I'm not a Rastafarian.
It's a good one.
It could do wonders for my pain. I don't know what that accent was either.
It's a good one.
Moving on.
When we first meet her, she already introduces herself as sort of a no-nonsense, kind of sneaky Aes Sedai. Like, and I'm actually going to go out on, I'm going to say something controversial here. She did not differentiate or distinguish herself any differently than Moraine did.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Elida does this thing where she's like describing things about Rand, and Morgaze is like, hey, you know, what is it that you're thinking right there? You need to say it out loud. And Elida's, I can't remember the exact thing, but Elida basically says, you know, this guy sucks and he's going to be the death of the world. But she like says it under her breath. She gets all real shiesty about it.
Yeah. Basically, like, she's like, he's at the center of all the pain and division that's like coming. But she like doesn't know exactly what's wrong with him, but like,
yeah,
it was shocking enough for her and worrisome enough where it was like she wanted to basically capture Rand and like interrogating.
Yeah, well, that's what I think gets me the most about it. She recognized how dangerous he is, but refused to tell anybody how dangerous he was. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she just kept that under her hat. She was just like, oh yeah, you know, he's mm-hmm. dangerous. He's the most dangerous man. He was at the center of all the chaos and suffering. But I'm not going to say anything about that. I'm not going to let anybody else know that.
Yeah. Knowledge is power.
And her little like whisper under her breath is like fulfilling the three oaths, because she can't lie, which also includes, as we learn, lies by omission. So if she says, I see chaos and suffering and pain and war, and this man is at the middle of it, it's mm-hmm. one of those situations where she said it out loud. She told the truth, like, good. But she was still able, she was still managed to keep those bits to herself. And damn it, that's not just shiesty as hell.
Yeah. So, Lyta was described as handsome and severe looking. I don't know how you look severe, but okay. that's just not a descriptor that I would ever think of, or nor do I get. Dark eyes and dark hair down to her shoulders, and stood around 5 foot 6 inches or 168 centimeters in height. She was the youngest daughter of a minor house in the north of Morendi, and her family's estate was not much more than just a farm. Born in 950 NE, which is about 49 years before Book One starts, roughly. But at the age of 17, she went to the White Tower, 1617, 967 NE. And she became the first novice to be raised to accepted in only 3 years. Like, she was only a novice for 3 years and then got raised to accepted. So it's pretty impressive.
Extremely impressive, yeah.
Yeah. Then in 973 NE, she got raised to the Shawl and became a full-on Aes Sedai and chose the Red Aja. And since then, she only ever deferred to the Ammerlin seat, a sitter, or there were like three other Aes Sedai that she knew were stronger than her. So she was a full sister when Moraine and Suan were there as novices and accepted and on. And apparently she really made life miserable for both of them, to the point where other Aes Sedai often had to step in and interfere to get her to calm down. And her excuse, and for those of you that watch the TV show, this will be a little reminiscent of how Leandrin interacts with Nynaeve. She claimed that her reason was because she wanted Moraine and Suwon to pass their classes and training. So she was present when Moraine tested for the Shawl and actually tried to make her fail. And then, of course, she was also there when Moraine and Suwon took their three oaths as Aes Sedai. At one point, she would have been considered very strong in the One Power by Aes Sedai standards. Though discovering channelers such as Shireena Malloy and Nynaeve and the reemergence of the Forsaken and all of this, and the uncommonly powerful ones amongst the IOY's ones and the Seafolk Windfinders, she was kind of became more of like average strength in comparison to really popular named characters. But before then, the only three people that surpassed her in power in the White Tower were Cad Swain, Karine, and Malin. And was matched by Moraine, Suwon, Lelian, and Romanda. So she was pretty high on the horse for a while. And then, of course, Egwene and Elaine surpass her as well. As well as Nicola and Bodwin Cawthon. Huh. Look at that.
Yeah, I remember the Two Rivers girls being extremely powerful.
Her other big claim to fame, and part of what got her the gig of being an advisor in Camelin, was her talent for foretelling, where she would be kind of like overtaken by visions to a degree, and kind of see what was about to happen. Kind of like, other than the way she treated Moraine and Suon, the biggest red flag, get it, red flag, that we find out about Elida is that back in the day, she supported the vileness after the Aiel War, which was the practice of the White Tower, just going out and immediately gentling and oftentimes killing men that could channel, just with no trial, no warrant, no nothing. It's the same event that led to the death of, that gentled Tom Merlin's nephew. Why can I not remember his name?
Oh, what was his name?
Was it like Owen?
Owen.
Yeah, Owen. Elida was actually one of the sisters that gentled Owen, which kind of displays why Tom really doesn't like Elida. And I think her presence in the court was another reason he left Morghese's court, I believe, or just didn't go back to it. Elida wound up escaping any kind of punishment for her participation in the vileness because she had a relative lack of involvement. And it was also decided to only punish a handful of folks to keep the whole thing, you know, quiet.
It's a bit of a damage control thing, yeah. It's always political.
Corrupt as shit damage control.
I mean, yeah.
It's like, when you do like your like derivative classification training for working with like DoD stuff, and they're like, you know, can you mark information secret or classified just to keep it from causing embarrassment, you know, to the United States? And the answer is no. Does it happen? I'm sure it does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it does all the time. I don't know though.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Don't quote me or take away my clearance, please. Thank you.
I mean, you can ask. There is someone you can ask who's got direct experience with that.
True. True.
I think he's currently a fugitive of the state still, living in Russia. Yeah.
So yeah, like Josh was talking about, she was advisor. Elida was an Aes Sedai advisor to Queen Morghese. The whole thought there was keeping close ties between the Lion Throne / Rose Crown and the White Tower, because it was just a tradition of them being close. And every ruler of Camelin and their daughters and sons wound up going to the White Tower, the sons to be trained as warders. And hopefully none of those got born with the spark, or that'd be super awkward. And the daughters to be tested to see if they can channel and so on. Queen Morghese was like known as a markedly weak channeler. I think oftentimes when you look at the listing of channeler strengths among the female channelers, Morghese is always like one of the last one or two, if not the last one or two. She's incredibly weak, and to the point where she technically didn't qualify, I believe, to even make accepted, but because of her station and the closeness of the White Tower and Camelin, they made her accepted, and she got a Great Serpent Ring.
Yeah.
But if you use the rings from the TV show, hers wouldn't have a stone in it, or it would have like a multicolor. Yeah, no, just no.
Yeah, they kind of meshed the Lady Amalisa's story with Morghese's right there, didn't they?
Yeah, a little bit. So she stays in that station until Leandrin does her shenanigans, and Elaine and the others wind up not being in the White Tower when Morghese comes by to visit. And Morghese is very understandably beyond furious that the daughter heir of Andor is missing, and looks at Elida and says, "You're not coming back with me," which makes me realize that had Leandrin not done her shit, Elida may not have really been back in the tower to do.
Oh my god! Right.
So,
good grief.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks again, Leandrin.
Yeah, right,
asshole.
Double for you.
Yeah. So and then from there, Elida, like, she still has like an obsession, kind of not like Pat and Fane level obsession, but not really close, but still a bit of an exception when finding Rand, because she's like, Moraine's interested in Rand, I want to know why. And she tries to like push Egwene and Nynaeve when she finds out that they all kind of like grew up together in the same town, same village. And she's like, I want all the information, and they're like, no, we're not going to tell you really anything.
Yeah,
there's nothing to tell.
I've always kind of interpreted that as like this whole situation is, so Elida left the tower to become, you know, to attach herself to the Lion Throne because she didn't want, to be Almirilin, but she, you know, through her foretelling, she knew that the key to winning Tarmin Gaiden would be the Lion Throne. And so she tied herself to Andor, and she even helped Morghaz in her can't think brain words competition to become queen.
What is that? The ascension.
Good grief. Yeah, whatever it was. But Elida even helped Morghaz ascend to the throne and become the queen. Now, I don't know if it's ever been confirmed or not, but we get the impression that she largely believes that it is Morghaz will be the key to that. And that's why she's so heavily connected to Morghaz and doesn't care that Elaine doesn't like her.
Oh, yeah.
And then when Morghaz basically fires her and says, get out of my sight, her next best option, looking for the power that she wants, is to become Almirilin. And she can, like, that's viable because she's powerful enough. She's a powerful enough channeler. But she has to take care of some business first before she can do that. And so she once again, and we've already been introduced to her, and we already see that she's a master maneuverer. She's a master at the intrigue and the cloak and the dagger. And now she's in the tower and now she's mad.
Yeah. So it's after she meets Rand that she starts using Elaine being at the tower as an excuse to frequently leave Andor, and goes to visit Elaine. And it's during this time that she notices what she considered strange visitors that frequented the Almirilin's office. Yeah. In particular, Nynaeve and Egwene. So that's part of also her questioning kind of and bugging them is trying to figure out what's going on. But when all three girls go missing, Elida immediately puts it at the Almirilin's feet, blaming Siouan, that it's all her fault, which isn't directly true, but isn't entirely wrong. But
which I think is part of what gives her the ammunition she needs, right? Because Siouan is like, no, I don't know what you're talking about, and has to like tricky Aes Sedai word it.
Yeah. So after then, she starts plotting with Alviarin to kind of maneuver and take the Almirilin seat. And finally, when the news of the Dragon Reborn from Tyr reaches the White Tower, she gets a bunch of sitters together and her close supportive circle and everybody and makes the move to take down Almirilin. Basically making the case that the Almirilin has been behind all the dragon's movements this whole time without even letting the tower know that, you know, she knows the dragon's alive and has access and all that kind of stuff. Which isn't entirely untrue. Like, that's, I think that's what makes the maneuvering so manipulative and kind of dastardly, is that, like, it is surrounded by a kernel of truth, and that's why Suan can't really effectively fight against the charges. Like, she couldn't, like, when they were like, Suan, do you have you known who the dragon is for a while? She couldn't just be like, no. She was bound by the oath to say, like, yeah, I've known.
Yeah.
And because I knew, my keeper of the Chronicles also knows, like, yeah, we've all known. So Elida is successful in her coup, and it gets Suan stilled, and Elida winds up being raised to the Ammerlin seat with Alviarin as her keeper of the Chronicles. Traditionally, the keepers of the same Aja that the Ammerlin raised, but Alviarin is from the white Aja, with Elida from the red. But, you know, Alviarin is also the highest ranking black Aja sister in the entire White Tower. So there's that. So Alviarin is trying to manipulate Elida for dark friendery. And Elida is, like, trying to do her own thing, which is literally just her wanting to do whatever she wants. And do, like, super weird stuff that's super against White Tower traditions, and kind of, like, even the good taste of the tower, whatever good taste they might have had, like building an Ammerlin palace on the, like, entire island. I was like, and, like,
I should build
having a, like, sitting there looking at the construction, being like, I can't wait for my palace to be taller than the tower. So, but it seems, you know, also, like, about the time she starts going that way, it's like she's been regulated where she can't make decisions on what's happening in the tower because of Alviarin and the manipulation she's doing. So she's like, well, fine, I'll build my own tower and you can't come and hang out in my cooler, bigger tower.
We're going to have a cooler tower. Yeah.
Like, freaking talk about embezzlement. Like, holy shit. This will be my tower. It's the greatest tower.
It's the best tower in the world. Oh, as a matter of fact, if we're talking about Elida, I need my hat.
Oh, yeah. Mine's around here somewhere. I think it's in my, closet in the bedroom. Anyway,
it's like triggers some kind of weird algorithm on YouTube.
Oh yeah, definitely are. Make sure you get up close to the camera so people can actually. There we go. Read,
okay, everybody watching. Make the White Tower great again. It's a joke.
Bruh. It's still going to happen.
I anyway, can't wait for it to happen. I want it to happen.
Yeah.
Come at me.
So Elida's the one that orders Galena to take a bunch of other Aes Sedai to capture the Dragon Reborn so they can imprison him. And basically guide him, is what she says, in prep for the last battle, because she believes that the only way for them to win is for the White Tower to control the Dragon Reborn like a puppet, or to lock him away. yeah, we're going to go start our own club. We're cute. Or to just, like, keep him locked away like the most dangerous thing to ever exist, and only release him to wreak havoc at the last battle, where once he's done, he can be killed. But that ultimately fails, and it gives Alviarin her biggest piece of blackmail to use against Elida, because of the whole event at Dumai's Wells and the fact that Aes Sedai got killed and stilled and captured and forced to bond and all that kind of stuff. Oh, not forced to bond then, but all this shit happened, and the failure is entirely Elida's. And Alviarin's like, cool. So you remember everything that you did to Suan because Suan was trying to control the dragon and not talking to the rest of the tower and the sitters about it? Yeah, that's what you just did.
Yeah.
So if you don't want me to tell everybody, you're going to do what I say to do when I say to do it. And Elida's like, oh, no, okay. yeah.
Dude, I've always thought Elida was someone who, like, starts out kind of nasty, but not necessarily evil. Like I said, there's very little differentiation between her and Moraine. Like, yeah, both of them will whisper shit under their breath. Both of them will say what they need to say and do what they need to do to forward their own agenda. Like, very little difference between Moraine and Elida in the beginning. And Elida immediately sets off looking for Rand because what she sees is one of the most dangerous people she's ever heard of. And she is one of the most powerful people on Earth right now. So for her to acknowledge Rand as an extremely dangerous man, she has to almost know right off the bat that he can channel, or at least suspect. And that, you know what I mean? Like, it's, there's just a lot to that. That's such a large statement. But as the story progresses, as we go on, Elida kind of goes off the deep end. Like, she gets real unhinged real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, oh God, I don't understand it. I really don't. But I used to say things like, okay, you know how you learn the lesson as a kid, you know, you tell a lie and then you have to tell another lie to cover that lie up. And before you know it, there's a lie monster and it's in control of your life because you've got to
protect monster all these lies. Where? Ruh-roh, Reagan.
I've always kind of looked at it like that. Like, it's a downward spiral of stress and strain and that she caused with her ambition. And then she got caught in a trap. And then people are taking advantage of that because when you play the game, you play hard, you know? Yeah. And we had a, well, did you want to go into the revelation right now, or was there more that you wanted to
discuss? Not yet.
Okay.
I'm going to try to.
I'll save that then.
Yeah. So it's at this point that she starts issuing all kinds of seemingly crazy, and I mean, not seemingly, they are like kind of crazy edicts. Some of which are actually her pure verbiage, the ones that are less important that Alviarin doesn't really care about. Some of them are altered or forced to be done by Alviarin, manipulating her. One of the big ones is she issues an edict by order of Alviarin that anybody who approaches the Dragon Reborn and doesn't do it through the White Tower is an enemy of Tar Valon.
Yep.
So, yeah, fucking absolutely crazy shit. Eventually, Elida is able to gather enough support amongst the sitters to have the hall vote to remove Alviarin as Keeper of the Chronicles, and she gets replaced by Tarna Fier, who is another Red Aja sister. In the meantime, kind of before this, Elida had told Cian to find out who helped Suan and Leanne and them escape. At this point, Elida is like, anybody who annoys me is obviously the criminal behind anything. So she thinks it's Alviarin. And that's why she tells Cian to follow the stench of treason, even up to the keeper, no matter how high it goes. And Cian interprets this as an order to hunt out Black Aja sisters and dark friends. And so she enlists the help of one of our favorite people, Pravara, to hunt down the Black Aja within the tower, which might would lead to Alviarin, but, you know,
things happen. If nothing else, it will hinder the efforts of the Black Aja.
Yeah. So then after that, there really starts becoming this real big rivalry and this direct confrontation between Saladar and the White Tower proper, or the Rebel Aes Sedai and the Aes Sedai with a home. It's a really mean way to talk about Saladar. The one's not living in tents.
The unhoused Aes Sedai.
Yeah. So this is when the palace is really underway. Bowen Sedai was a spy they sent to Saladar on that Elida sent to Saladar had returned and told Elida their plans and also showed Elida some stolen knowledge, like how to skim, how to travel, and a bunch of new forms of healing. And then, of course, you know that Egwene, Alvir, had been named the Amyrlin of Saladar and the true Amyrlin, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, this is bullshit. Then Egwene goes out and tries to turn the chains for the harbors into Quendiar, like the anti-siege chains, because at this point they are essentially laying a very soft siege against Tarvalon. They're just like barring, like blocking anybody going in, really. So they're all just kind of staring at each other. So Egwene tries to turn the chains at the tower gates and into the harbors, into Quendiar. And during that, because Bonin, traitor, whatever, had told Elida the plans, they get stopped. Egwene gets captured, and Elida's like, I will break you. And never actually does. I must
break you.
It's at this point that really Elida finds herself increasingly alone. More and more people are turning away from her just because of her actions, and she's being like pretty erratic and extreme about everything. I think this is also the time frame where she starts ordering Aes Sedai to submit themselves to the Mistress of Novices for punishment. That's like the straw that didn't really break the camel's back, but definitely pulled several muscles in the camel's back.
Yeah, she got real, and this is what I'm saying. She gets real unhinged. Like, it goes from sadistic and conniving to do a little bit of good, do a little bit of bad, you know, blinded by some ambition, not really seeing some consequences. And then it starts getting to here where it's just like, wow, the powers that seven stripes stole has really gone to your head.
Yeah. To the point, there's even a point where Elida is like actually talking with people, and Egwene, I think, overhears the contemplation where she's like, maybe there should be a fourth oath to force loyalty to the Amyrlin seat. And everyone's like, no, the fuck. Elida continues trying to break Egwene. They're keeping her fed with fork roots so she can barely channel or not really channel at all. She's getting strappings or beatings like daily, several times a day. But Egwene is being the badass she is. And thanks to her time with the Aiel, Wise Ones, you know, she's able to handle all of it with no problem.
I can think of is Harry Potter when they're like, and do they beat you at St. Mungo's home for disturbed teens? He's like, oh yes, they beat me two or three times a day.
It's in the blood. If there's something wrong with the bitch, there's something wrong with the pup.
Yeah, you see it in dogs all the time.
Let me tell you. Oh no, I seem to be expanding. Egwene is like clashing with Elida, and they're fighting and arguing like in front of sitters, even verbally, very openly. And she keeps bringing up Elida's kind of her tyrannical attitude towards sisters and the idiocy of her plan on kidnapping the dragon, basically being like, you know, you're a tyrant, you're stupid, you're a horrible person. And eventually Elida fucking snaps. Yeah. And starts beating the shit out of Egwene with switches of air. And then throws her in the dungeons. And that's when Sylveana is like, this is ridiculous, denounces Elida's treatment of Egwene in front of the entire hall.
Yes.
And that's when Elida puts Sylveana in Egwene's place and raises Katarina Ludren as Mistress of Novices. After being chastised by the hall, she remains the Amyrlin, but her position is like, she's like the lame duck president. She has no authority to do anything. Everything goes through the hall. And yeah. It's pretty like later that night, is when the Shanshan attack the White Tower. They raid it. Elida is captured and taken off. She is renamed to Sufa, and later is brought before Fortuona and is forced, who at this point is Empress of the Shanshan, and is forced to show the Shanshan how to fucking travel.
So. The worst. She is the worst.
Yeah.
Look, I hate Elida. I do. There are just really supremely hateable characters in this book series, and she's one of them.
She's the reason that several sisters have been killed, reason that several have been stilled. She's also the one that sent the vastly understaffed contingent of Aes Sedai to handle the Black Tower. And they get there, yes. And they're like, yeah, because she's like, oh, there can't be more than like 12. And they
half
get there,
a dozen to a dozen hundreds. Half-trained little boys.
Yeah, and they get there, and there's like literal hundreds of Ashaman. And I mean, Taim and Logain, like they, or was it just Logain at this point? Either way, they do some actually like terrible shit, and they forcibly bond all of the Aes Sedai that
Elida sent. It's the way the weave is worked out, and it is that way because the men who are bonding their wives, well, the men who are bonding women were bonding their wives, and they learned to do it with a kiss. Does it dismiss Logain for being kind of creepy and gross about it? No.
that's the thing. Like, this one was forcibly done. Like, the Aes Sedai yeah. didn't really have a choice.
Yes, and once
now,
again,
a lot of them
bonding yeah. is horrible.
Yeah. A lot of them agreed because they were like, well, it's either this or something worse. Like, I'm a prisoner. At least this way I can find more information and report back and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm an Aes Sedai. I can make everything work to my advantage. JK, you can't. So that is a not so brief breakdown of Elida's past history, where she comes from, her mentality. And I think even a brief thing without going into super, super detail like that shows the progressive degradation of her mental stability and just moving from seeming to be like this actually kind of like calm and collected person that can make plans and execute them to somebody that's like having a dick measuring contest with her own city by trying to build her own palace to make it taller than the tower she already runs. Like, who the hell does that?
Yeah.
So she also was the one that had the Ammerlin study moved to the absolute top of the White Tower.
Yeah.
She's like, there should be nobody above the Ammerlin. It's like, because I remember there was a passage where like novices were like grunting and shit, carrying like heavy furniture or whatever.
Because
up the stairs. Because spoiler alert, they didn't have elevators.
What? So. Yeah. No.
But now let's.
Yeah, she just.
Whatever you're gonna say, and then we'll get into.
She just gets worse and worse and worse. And I know for me, I just always assumed she was just, you know, again, blinded by ambition, and the forces of the shadow played that ambition and to make her compliant, right? To just be like, hey. And there's still some truth in that. That still kind of did happen, but in a very unexpected way.
Yeah. Like, I always thought that, like, her being Morgaze's advisor gave her too much exposure to like what relatively unrestrained power can do.
Yeah.
And then she wanted that, and that's what she pursued. And as she got more and more power, the more power she got, the more afraid she was of losing it. And so she literally just started losing her mind. And that's what I always thought happened. I thought it was just that, like, you know, the whole absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'm afraid of losing my power, so I'm going to exercise more of my power that makes people hate me more, making it more likely that I lose my power. You know, there's that. But as it happens, thanks to a nice conversation just a couple days ago with some lovely, fantastic friends that we've made over at Talk Around Riyadh.
Mm-hmm.
There might be more to the story that I never noticed or really thought about, and I don't know that many people have, considering how easy it is to miss. So
I didn't. When you read that, I went, I mean, again, let's get the link for that episode in the description below, and then let people listen to it themselves so they can hear the process of how we came to this, because I didn't even after you read it, even after we like unveiled it, even after you unveiled it, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, but that's not what that means, is it? And then the more that we talked about it, the more it was like, no, that's exactly what that means.
Yeah. So should I just read it?
Yeah, let's just go get in it.
All right. For those of you reading along for this, like 3 second reading, this is in book 6, Lord of Chaos, chapter 28, which I can't remember the chapter title. It is titled Letters, and has the dagger symbol, letting you know that a certain pain in the ass is going to be a part of this chapter. A Padden Fane pain, if you will. And that's whose POV we find this in. Here it is. Here we go. Talking about Pedro Niel, he says, unlikely Niel would have ever supported Althor any more than Elida would have, but it was best not to take too much for granted with Rand Bloody Althor. Well, he had brushed them both with what he carried from Eridol. They might possibly trust their own mothers, but never Althor now. And that was where I figured out, okay, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I did sleep, but I had nightmares of people that were bad, maybe not being bad because of they're just being bad.
Yeah.
So, because...
Well,
Eridol, of course, is the old name for what is now known as Shadar Logoth, where the Tainted Dagger comes from, where... Padden Fane has assimilated all of Eridol / Shadar Logoth's greed into him in the form of Mashadar. That's all assimilated and a part of him now.
Right.
And we saw what it did to Matt.
Yeah, and because of the Dark One's effect, whatever he did to Padden Fane, was that?
Well, they describe it as every time that he was done with something and had to go back to Shaw Ghul, he was distilled. So Padden Fane whiskey. That should be a souvenir series shirt right there. I know there's already a Padden Fane souvenirs in shops, but...
Well, luckily for us...
the Shaitan Distillery. There you go.
I love it.
Be all you can be. Come to the Shaitan Distillery.
It's this is interesting because in a very if you've read Lord of the Rings, you've got Wormtongue, who is this very same way. He comes it to you and he says, "Hey, I've got the solution to all your problems." And Robert Jordan loves to do this, put in these real life sort of parallels. And if someone comes up to you and says, you know, there's a real easy solution to this, maybe there is, but maybe that's a trap. Maybe there's actually not a really easy solution, and maybe you just got to do some hard shit. Mm-hmm. Aglimar saw right through it immediately, was like, nope, get your stank ass out of here. I am not going to listen to what you have to say. There is no easy solution to beating back the Trollocs. It's just day by day, it's a grind, and we hold. And he kept to his own. We saw Padden Fane corrupt white cloaks walked in and said, "Hey, I know where all the Dark Friends are. I know where all the Shadowspawn are. You got to come with me." And one by one, the white cloaks stopped, you know, cleaning their laundry. They stopped worrying about hygiene. They were consumed with this madness, this sickness of Shia Gul. And then, as you just read in that passage, we get this passage that straight up says, you know, he was out there seeding behaviors, seeding that paranoia in order to spread the influence of Aridol. Or, and what we have here is confirmation that not only did he seed that in the White Tower, he actually brushed Elida with that. And what do we know about that? It preys on your ambition. Ambition in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. You can have ambition and still be a good person. You can still be ambitious and be a good person. But what you need to worry about is what you're willing to sacrifice or give up for that ambition. How much influence can something like Aridol have over you if you are unwilling to give it fertile ground in your mind and in your soul?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I think there was something else, some other like fantasy kind of aspect that does the same thing. Like, it doesn't sorry, I had to sneeze. It doesn't like make you good or bad. It just accentuates the characteristics that already exist. And I do think it is similar to this, though. I think definitely emotions or feelings or thoughts or predispositions that are closer to like greed and power hungry are way easier for Mashadar to basically push you and toward, just like with compulsion. It's a lot easier to compel somebody to do something they kind of already wanted to do than it was to make them do something they didn't.
Right.
So I think the same thing here, but I think like the influence from Mashadar is definitely a thing that definitely pushes you in the darker direction. So even if you're like a completely nice person wanting to do good things for people, it'll still start pushing you to think you're doing good things, which Elida often did. She thought that like the way she was trying to capture the dragon was the right thing and a good thing for the world. Because she thought that if she captured the dragon, Reborn, and held him away until the last battle showed up, that all the chaos going on in the world would stop. Like, she literally thought she was going to save the world from chaos by doing this.
Yeah, there was a lot of hubris in her plan.
Yeah, and by doing so, she would cement herself as the an unopposable Amyrlin seat, and she wouldn't be as weak as Suon was. She would succeed where Suon failed. That was a recurring theme as well. But whenever, for me, where I think the distinct difference that most clearly shows the effect of the Shadow Logoth paint on her and what Fane did to her, is when she starts to truly just go unhinged, where she's putting out all these edicts like, you know, the Aes Sedai aren't loyal to me. Maybe we should do a fourth oath that makes them be loyal. Oh, Aes Sedai can be sent to the Mistress of Novices for punishments and beating and, you know, all this kind of stuff, where she goes from like doing stuff that you can kind of, that you can actually see a thought process as to why she thinks it's the right thing to do, to just doing anything she can to reinforce her own power. And it in turn completely destabilizes the tower itself. I'm just seeing, because the tower has never been more vulnerable. And when it's at its most vulnerable, and when she has pretty much lost all of her power at this point and pretty much just wrecked the tower, is when the Shan Chan attack. So
true.
Yeah. And if anyone's like, oh, well, you know, Fane can't do that, you know, or the taint doesn't work like that, look at what he did to Ma Shin Shin.
Yeah.
Like the dude was like, able
literally to turned it to his service.
Washington. Yeah. Like the Black Wind now, instead of it just being random psychobabble, is now random Haddon Fane psychobabble with a focus and obsession on Rand. Like, that's it. And no, it's not because the taint that he has is the same as the taint that made Mosh and Shen, because they're not. They're not.
Yep.
So yeah. Where all of the, I think the capacity for Elida to be as bad as she is definitely exists. It was there. But I don't think half of the stuff she does after meeting with Haddon Fane would have happened if it wasn't for what Haddon Fane did. Because if you're wondering where this meeting happened and everything, it happens in the prologue, Fires of Heaven. Because this is where Elida, as Yarmulan, is meeting with her whole council in her study. She's only been the Ammerlin for like a little under 2 months. So this is very early on into her rulership of Tar Valon. And Haddon Fane comes in after Elida dismisses the whole council. And in passing, she mentions that Sylviana is her new mistress of novices. Haddon Fane walks into the study, sees the tension between Elida and Alviarin, and is like, you know, he loves that, but he doesn't like Alviarin because he's like, it seems like she knows too much about me, but I don't know why, but it feels weird. And he's mainly there because he still wants the Horn of Valyr, but he really wants the Ruby Dagger that is in the White Tower now. And he really wants it because he's like, if I go back to Shadow Logoth to feel whole again, I'll probably get trapped and never get out of there again. Yeah. They talk about Rand, and that's where he kind of imparts a lot of his, like, Rand is dangerous, you know, he can't be left alone, blah, 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 you should capture him. And then tells Elida that she must tie a string to one of the few that he trusts, he being Rand, if she wants to lead him. And Elida's like, huh, good point. Definitely didn't notice that you just instilled me with a whole bunch of influence and corruption.
Right.
But and we also know that the corruption and everything from Eridol like eats away at you and just infects every kind of facet of your being eventually. What it does with Haddon Fane. I mean, at this point he's completely absorbed by the taint of Mashadar and trying to remain whole. So
yeah, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
And he's speaking in different voices with different accents. He's got mood shifts. He's got all this thing, and you just kind of go, okay, buddy, like, you good? He's like those crackheads that are just walking around downtown, like, what's going on? I don't know.
Oh yeah, just sitting outside of the 7-Eleven. You got some change?
Yeah,
you buy that honey bun.
But he's more dangerous than that, because if you give him change, you know, now
he'll just stab you.
Affected. You're affected by the for the rest of your life with a presence that feeds on your ambition, paranoia, greed, and where you've got Elida, who's already in a stressful situation. I mean, look, ruling the world is hard enough. and yes, it is. Like, before anybody's like, oh, I don't feel sorry for the king, blah, blah, blah. No, it is hard being in charge. And the only people who say, boo-hoo, you had it hard, you were in charge of everything, is people who have never been in charge of anything, okay?
Very true.
You have to make hard decisions. You have to do shit that is going to be very, very not okay with people that need to be done. Now, am I defending Elida here? Yeah, maybe a little bit. Overall, I disagree with her methods. I disagree with her, you know, the way she handles everything. But when Padan Fain walked into that room and felt the tension between those two, he didn't know exactly what was going on, but he knew this would be a great place for that influence to flourish, because it had ambition, it had anger, it had hatred, it had paranoia, it had all those things that it needs to just flourish. And so it makes sense that her decline would be more rapid than maybe someone else's were, because that those themes were so prevalent and so powerful in her life.
Yeah. I think also, like, for him, I think his chief motivation was obviously, like, if I can get this person to also cause problems for Althor and keep him busy so that he might slip up more, absolutely. I think that was a prevailing thought. But honestly, I think the second thought was I don't think he really gave a shit about fucking with the White Tower, really. Like, no. He didn't really care about what the White Tower did. He didn't like Avi Arryn. And was like, right. Well, if I can influence the Ammerlin to work against Avi Arryn, maybe at some point in the future, Avi Arryn will just slip up or die or something. Because I don't like the fact that it seems like she knows a lot about me. And we know Padan Fain, in his tainted, crazy mind, is exactly that petty. Because, like, well before this, like, whenever they were moving to Toman Head, like, he didn't, like, nail a Murdral to the barn doors for, like, a good reason. The Murdral was just, like, in front of him, and Padan Fain got pissed about not having the horn got pissed about something. I forgot what it was. Like, he was just in his thoughts about some unhinged thing, and he's like, yeah. Oh. Whoops, I nailed the Murdral to the door. Now all the Trollocs fear me more than it. Cool.
Yeah.
So he's definitely petty enough to do this kind of shit.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right there.
So not giving Padan Fain's like props for being some like master, you know, evil plan architect. He's really not. He's definitely like the Heath Ledger Joker, like, you know. Yeah, I chase a car, but I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it, except Padan Fain would just be like, if I caught the car, I'd stab it. Like, I'd nail it to like an overpass or something. Like, I don't know. So, but I think Elida, up until the point of being infected with the Eridol taint, is somebody that could have been reasoned with. And would have, like, I don't think an untainted Elida would have tried to build her own palace.
Right.
I don't think an untainted Elida would have as easily succumbed to Avi Arryn's manipulation and eventually just outright, you will do what I say. I think she would have, like, had a better plan and been able to resist it a bit. But... because he looked at me funny. because prior to all this, I mean, she was very observant. She was really, despite her methods being like underhanded and sneaky for sure, she wasn't really ever wrong. She was wrong in method, but not wrong in reason.
Right.
Because, I mean, her bringing, calling Suan and Leanne out and getting them deposed, by tower law, she was fully in the right. And I think even Suan is like, it's dirty, and I don't think she did it because it was the right thing to do, but she didn't violate law. Like,
well, she
did the right thing, and that's part of what hurt them so much. Because Elida did the right thing in the right way for the wrong reasons.
Cad Swain and Egwene both acknowledge the treachery and treason of the Saladar Aes Sedai. Like, Cad Swain straight up says, you rebelled against a lawfully elected, appointed, seated Ammerlin seat. And Egwene, when she comes back into the tower and takes the stole, she says,
penance for all of the Saladar.
She says, what she said was that she would accept the apology of the Saladar Aes Sedai.
Oh, yeah, because they all looked at her like dumbfounded, like, you were in charge.
And she's like, nope, I am the tower, bitch. She's like, well,
yeah, like, I'm the Omerlan. I'm in charge of all Aes Sedai. So I have to fix this.
Yep.
Talk about a nice caveat loophole to get yourself out of trouble.
For real.
And then you can't even get in trouble after the last battle because you go and do your best, like, Quartz Crystal impression.
But yeah,
I think a lot of the more memorable things that make us dislike Elida, especially thinking that she's just evil for the sake of being evil, she's not even a dark friend evil. I think a fair portion of it is just this corruption wearing down her mind, mixed with Alviarin, like, absolutely breaking Elida down over time to make her more and more of a puppet.
Yeah.
And then by the time Elida can rid herself of Alviarin, the corruption from Pad and Fane is just far too strong at that point. And I don't know that anything could actually remove that, because I think even in the little bit where she does show the Seanchan how to travel, I think, like, her, for lack of a better phrase, handler even remarks that, like, she's still defiant and that will have to be fixed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man, it's something intense, because, you know, the other thing that fits this here is it fits the theme of people who stand alone are most susceptible to corruption and influence. The people who go their own way and think they can do it by themselves are the ones who stand to lose the most. They stand to lose their soul, you know, without trying to sound too overdramatic or melodramatic or anything like that. But Elida got this way. She found herself susceptible in this way because she thought herself better. She separated herself from others. And in the end, she didn't have a confidant. She didn't have a close friend to look at her and go, honey, you're being unhinged.
She never had to really answer to anybody in earnest until it was too late for that experience to honestly do character building style humbling.
Yeah.
I mean, minor noble family, and you probably stayed out on the farm, meaning you never really had to deal with any other nobles. And then by the time you were 16 or 17, you left and went to the tower. You're told your shit don't stink because you're the first ever novice to be raised to accept it within 3 years. So you're already put on a pedestal, and then you get away with all this stuff as an Aes Sedai. There's only 3 other Aes Sedai stronger than you, and only 2 other people that you have to listen to because of their positions. Well, not including all the other sitters. Even then, you only have to really listen to your own sitters, because the other sitters don't really involve themselves in directly telling other Ajahs what to do, I don't think. It's more, unless it's a collective decision. So you really don't have to answer to anybody. And then when it does start looking like people that are stronger than you might become a problem, like, you get, like, the perfect out to go and, you know, be the right-hand woman to the Queen of Andor, the queen of the largest and most wealthy territory this side of the Dragon Wall. So, I mean, in some ways, her life was set up to be very easy, and I think that's probably what led a lot to her mentality that led to her downfall and her vulnerability to Fane and Mashadar, Mordath, whoever you want to call it.
Yeah.
A tank that ain't a tank because it tank.
The tank. That's right. That's how it is.
That's my final thought.
You know, I love it. I do. It's good. It's a good story. Once again, we find Robert Jordan giving us a really great character who is, yeah, total jerk, but not evil. And Egwene nails it when she drops that burn and says, you know, I would name you Dark Friend too, but I think they'd be ashamed to claim you.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing that I love about all this kind of stuff is here we are in our sixth year of the podcast. And we're still learning stuff that makes characters that are like almost universally considered in certain ways.
Yeah.
And we're learning stuff that makes them a bit more plausible, a bit more maybe humane and relatable, or just allows us to understand what happens with them a lot better. It's like, you know, whenever we were reading and talking about Luce Theron, and it was like, oh, he just wanted to charge in and fight and blah, blah, blah. He didn't listen to anybody. And then we find out, like, no, he did. And then when their plan failed and became impossible is when he did what he did.
Yeah.
So I felt very vindicated because I was always like, he's actually not that bad. I was right.
Yeah.
But and then now for Elida, you know, it's still a terrible person, but, you know, maybe more understandable why Elida just loses her absolute shit at some point in the book.
Yeah.
Goes from, you know, kind of bad guy, but rational bad guy to fucking, who was that? That the Roman emperor that like ordered the army to attack the ocean because like someone drowned?
Was it Caligula?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was freaking Caligula. Because wasn't he also like, didn't he have like syphilis or something and it like really fucked his brain or something?
I can't remember. I know the one of them was just unhinged because he was raised, you know, as a rich emperor, child emperor, and nobody ever said no to him.
Yeah, it was Caligula. As returning to Rome without a victory was unthinkable, he declared war on Neptune, god of the sea, and had the waves whipped. And his soldiers were ordered to collect seashells as prizes of war.
Just why? Just why? It's just crazy.
I love how I put in why was Caligula, and like the third search is crazy. Oh, Caligula pretended he was a god. Some believe that he suffered from epilepsy. I didn't know that epilepsy would do that. Anyway.
Oh, no, that doesn't sound right. Anyway, thanks everyone for being here as we talk about yet another. I think this is kind of a fun series where we take a really hateable character that we just want to punch him in the face and then see if there's any sort of redemption for them.
From like hateable to relatable, the Elida story.
Dude, that's a good title. Right.
Other than the fact that it's the Elida story, I would agree.
I mean, yeah, that's true. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, everybody, for listening and watching and downloading and liking and clicking and subscribing and doing all your thing and sitting and vibing. Thanks to all our Patreons who can get this dose of taint while it's still warm. Just dripping
warm and
off.
Gooey. Like a Subway chocolate chip cookie.
If you want to get early access to the episodes and tune in live for live recording, you can be a Patreon. That benefit is available at our lowest level, which is $1 a month. If you can't do that, totally understood. Go ahead and click the like button and hit us with a subscribe because that also helps us and it's an absolutely free way to support us. And we absolutely appreciate that.
Absolutely. And let us know what you think. How much of Elida's unhinged activities were the fault of Patton Fane being his sneaky little snail trail tainty self that he is. just leaving a trail of Mashadar slime everywhere he goes. You know, is she still overall completely bad? Yes, we agree. She is.
Yeah.
But, you know, does she deserve as much unrestrained dislike as she gets? Or do you think there's room for some understanding? And maybe, I can't believe I'm saying this, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of sympathy for Elida. Like tiny.
Sympathy,
like,
for the devil? Maybe, sympathy maybe for Elida?
Yeah. Like maybe like the size of two atoms sympathy.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit.
And extra.
Tell us what you think.
Whoever winds up saying if Elida wants your sympathy, she can find it in the dictionary between shit and syphilis.
That's it.
So.
Tell us what you think in the comments below. Tell us what you really think about Elida. Do not hold back. Bonus points if you can get the language filter to get your comment.
Bonus points if YouTube stops your comment because it thinks it's bullying. Bully people. Don't be that asshole. But
you can bully.
Let us know. And if you want to talk about it more directly, make sure you hop into our Discord again. All that can be found at blacktowerpod.com. Go over to w.gg. and get yourself some Jitterless Energy. It's fantastic stuff. Remember to use code BTP for 10% off or click the link in the description below. There's also a link with a 25% discount code to pre-order the Eye of the World soundscape made by Jordan over at, why did I just blank? I literally had his name for like last 10 minutes.
You had it right.
A long awaited soundscape. Right. There you go. Over at a long awaited soundscape.
I'm gonna remember it.
I need a Jimmy Neutron brain blast. Anyway, that's gonna do it for us here. Thank you all for listening. We love you. We appreciate you. We see you. You know, not literally. We don't have cameras in your house, so there's definitely no need to look any closer.
Yes, at that picture we totally frame. Do not have cameras in your.
The BTP coins definitely don't have microphones in them. That's creepy. I just creeped myself out. All right. We love y'all. We'll see y'all next time. Goodbye. Be safe.